If you're looking for a podcast to help break down your favorite team's picks in the recent NFL draft.
Didn't the draft already happen?
Yeah, it did. I said in the recent NFL draft.
Oh, okay.
And break down the picks.
Oh, we don't want to break them down. They got to be able to play.
No, I mean, well, to be honest, I don't really know what I mean. Because this is not that podcast.
No, not even.
This is, however, comedy.
Tragedy.
Marriage. Welcome to Comedy Tragedy Marriage, a podcast where a longtime married couple gets together each week, taking turns selecting a movie, TV show, or documentary to watch. We watch it together, and then we sit down and discuss why we liked it, loved it, or loathed it, and then share that discussion with you. I'm Stan the Movie Man. I have been known to, on occasion, review films at stanthemovieman.com. You can follow me on Twitter, at Movie Man Stan. You can follow the podcast, at CT Marriage. You can also follow me on Spoutable, Threads, and Blue Sky. All on those platforms, at Stan the Movie Man. If you have a question for us, or if you'd like to suggest a movie for us to watch and discuss on the podcast, you can send that to us via email, comedytragedymarriage at gmail.com. You can also send us a voice message simply by clicking the link in the description of this episode. Joining me, as always, is my lovely other half.
Oh, you're nice. I am Maud the Great and Lovely Broad, and that's really deceptive considering what we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was your choice this week, and I will let you take it from here.
Yeah. So first, I'm going to give an introduction to the person responsible for what we watched, and then we'll talk about what we actually watched, okay? We're going to talk about a young woman, a very gifted artist, named Amanda Mustard. She is an independent photojournalist and filmmaker. She splits her time between Brooklyn, New York, and Bangkok, Thailand. She has contributed work to clients like the Associated Press, the New York Times, Outside Magazine, Monocle, National Geographic Proof, Le Monde in Paris, Al Jazeera, Bloomberg, the Smithsonian, Ritz-Carlton, corporate clients like Chrysler, Facebook, Colgate, and many others. She is an advocate, among other things, for the protection and sustainability of the freelance community and gender equality in the media industry. No slouch here, this young woman. She has got some serious credibility and some serious artistry and skills working for her. Now, her directorial debut is a feature-length documentary film called Great Photo, Lovely Life.
And at this point, we should probably issue a trigger warning.
Yeah. This documentary deals with childhood sexual abuse, pedophilia, so it may not be... This podcast may not be for everyone, and this documentary may not be for everyone. So we know. Great Photo, Lovely Life premiered at South by Southwest in March of 2023 and began airing, aired on HBO December 5th, 2023. You can visit the film's website for more information. Great Photo, Lovely Life is something I actually had watched by myself a number of weeks ago. Stan had gone to bed early, and Maud was up late doing her late night, you know, menopausal thing and bouncing around among the channels. And Stan has gotten Maud into documentaries specifically focusing around true crime. And I was bouncing around the interwebs looking for things to watch to keep me company at night. And I thought, okay, this looks interesting. And oh my God, interesting does not begin to cover it. Amanda Mustard grew up in Pennsylvania on a Christmas tree farm. Seems like a bucolic, idyllic sort of existence, right? Her grandfather, a doctor, Bill Flickinger, was a chiropractor, and he sort of had several different locations where he worked, and we find out that some of his moving around was because he got in trouble. Amanda has an older sister whose name is Angie. Angie and Amanda's mother is Debbie. All of these women contribute hugely to this documentary. For all of the work, far-flung, exotic locations and halfway across the world, the far-reaching destinations that Amanda Mustard has been to and documented and filmed and photographed, I think don't necessarily hold a candle to the sweeping scope of the story that she found closest to home. There was a family secret that was like hushed up, not talked about for decades, actually. And it was the fact that Grandpa Bill was a pedophile, child rapist, and molested girls in his own family, including his daughter Debbie and Amanda's older sister Angie. As the layers of family history are peeled away, there's a lot of dysfunction that we find. There's a lot of denial that I think plays very strongly into the narrative that we see unfolding in this documentary. When Angie is a child, and I think Amanda is just like an infant at the time, their mother goes through a divorce and feels that she has no choice but to move back in with her parents, her mom and Grandpa Chiropractor Bill. And at this point, the abuse goes down to another generation because Grandpa Bill proceeds to abuse Angie, even though Debbie says that she has been promised by her mother that she will not an let Angie out of her sight. She will not, allow anything bad to happen to her. Debbie mom feels like she has no place else to go. She's got to try to get a job. She's got to try to support these daughters. A lot of what we see is Amanda sort of playing go between her mother and her sister, trying to suss out what actually happened in each of their histories. There's a lot of old, old photographs and slides that we see. There's a lot of old school home movies, like on film, Super 8 or whatever it was they used. And we get a gradual picture of this family coming together, and what we find is really troubling because not only does Grandpa Bill abuse his daughter and speak very matter-of-factly about it, we meet Grandpa Bill when he is in an assisted living in South Florida, and his wife has died, and Amanda has decided that she wants to talk to him and try to get him to talk about his pathology or his whatever it is that has made him do this. See if he will own up to it, and then own up to the damage that he's caused, not only within his own family, but within the families of countless little girl patients who it turns out he molested over decades of time in multiple cities. One city, Harrisburg, he had to move from because he got into a little trouble there. And instead of prosecuting him and sending him to jail or doing whatever, they just sort of allowed him to just sort of go away. But we meet Grandpa in an assisted living. Mother and daughter, Debbie and Amanda, have gone down there, and a camera person is with them to film these conversations. And Amanda asks, did you realize that this was this an attraction that you always had? And he said, yes. And he said that he remembered only one instance touching his daughter Debbie in the bath, but she liked it. And he speaks very matter-of-factly about this clearly super wrong, very messed up, evil behavior with his own daughter, and says, well, it was okay because she liked it. They all liked it, he says. And it's abhorrent that he doesn't seem to realize that it's wrong, or that it has damaged the people, that he's harmed people, or that there should be any kind of reckoning over what he's done. Grandpa has problems, and I don't claim to be a therapist or a psychologist or a criminologist or any kind of specialist, but it seems I don't I mean, he clearly has no grasp on reality that he can't acknowledge that this was an evil thing that he did. Anyway, I watched this by myself, and then thought that it was something that it would be good for Stan and me to watch together. So,
Yeah.
yeah. Not fun, not easy,
No.
but important.
Yes, it is an uncomfortable watch. Especially when she starts talking to him about the little girls that he touched, that he abused. And he starts talking about how they liked it. He is completely unrepentant, even though a time or two he says, "Oh, I don't want to think this way. It's just how I am." And there's my analytical side that has, heard that there are people who are attracted to children who never actually act on that attraction. And that the people who, are like that can't get any help because if they tell a therapist or psychiatrist or counselor or anything, they, in many states, perhaps federally,
Mandatory reporting
are required to be reported.
because they're a risk to the safety of the community and children.
Right. Because that therapist or counselor or whatever is not with them 24 hours a day and doesn't know if they're telling the truth. But there are people with an attraction to children who never do anything about it. They are able to maintain some level of control.
Well, we've heard that. I don't know if I can make myself believe it or not.
Well, you know, there are no absolutes, and I do believe it. But in this case, Grandpa Bill needed to be dropped off a short pier with concrete shoes a long time ago. He was caught a couple of times. He was prosecuted, but he got probation a couple of times. Like, and he didn't even lose his license until the very last time. He would just move to a new community where nobody knew who he was. He'd find a new chiropractic clinic to work in, and he would just pick up where he left off.
Also, I think we should say this was a, you know, pillar of the community type family, religious, church going.
On the outside.
There's a lot, well, there's a big difference between religious and really God followers.
Well, yes, there's, and that applies to pretty much everything. So, but, you know, there's, you could see the level of abuse, not just of little girls, but his own wife, because she was referred to by one name that the granddaughters always knew her by, but her real name was something completely different.
Yeah, Yeah, he made her go by Lois. She was like his office person in one of the clinics that he worked in, and he made her go by the name Lois. Her real name was Celesta.
Celesta, that was.
You know, everybody, all the patients and stuff who came through just knew her as Lois. Well, guess what? Her name wasn't really Lois.
Wasn't even a middle name.
Yeah, he didn't. You know, like her real name, so he just decided she was going to be called something else. During the process of this whole thing, they were able to obtain a lot of paperwork and like records and things where he had gotten into trouble. And through the course of this documentary, they found the names of some of his potential victims through his patient lists, I guess, billing records, that kind of thing. And so they wrote letters saying, it's come to our attention that you were a patient of you know, Dr. Bill Flickinger, and we understand that he abused some of his patients, and we're sorry. We are issuing sorry for what he has done. And Amanda's whole thing in doing this, in part, was to force Grandpa to hear what he had done and the results of what he had done. One patient, former patient, whose name was Bonnie, we see some FaceTime calls and things between her and Amanda talking about her history with Grandpa Bill and the lingering damage that his abuse had wrought in her adult life moving forward. And Bonnie and Amanda actually meet up and go to one of the clinics, the clinic where Bonnie was treated and abused, which was actually owned by Dr. Hurd. And they actually go into the clinic and speak with Dr. Hurd and Mrs. Dr. Hurd. And one of the hardest to watch moments in this whole film was where Dr. Hurd gives lip service to, yes, what Bill did was wrong, and but God forgives and God can redeem and God restores us. And he sort of bamboozles them into this really awkward, cringy prayer circle situation.
Yes. And Bonnie had been real triggered by being in that building again.
Yeah, seeing it, smelling it again.
Hyperventilating almost and crying.
She said she felt sick.
And
Dr. Hurd
put his hand on her head
during this super
cringy prayer. It was like, okay, probably the last thing she wants is a man she does not know
touching her. Yeah.
That
would have sent me flying out the door. Full disclosure, I am a Christian. I am a believer. But there are times and places to pray. And this particular time and place was not for this lip service, mealy mouth prayer that was not what this woman needed. This woman needed Dr. Hurd to say, yes, what he did to you within these walls was abhorrent. And we never get that from him.
No.
And
what she needed was sort of, what she needed was an apology. She needed for
him
to
be believed.
Say, I am so sorry that happened to you here. If we had had any idea, we would have gotten rid of him so much sooner.
Yeah.
But
so she left feeling just as sick as she did when she went in. And Amanda asks her, she's like, do you need a hug now or do you need some space? And she's like, I need space. And that was one of the most visceral moments watching for me. Besides which, when she's talking to her sister Angie and Angie's talking about how her grandfather had abused her, and she's like, what really bothers me about the whole thing, besides just the fact that it happened, was that our mother placed me in that environment knowing that that was a possibility. And so there's this rift between mother and daughter that happens. And then, you know, at the outset of the thing, we believe that mother is, you know, totally on board and totally cognizant of, you know, her dad's damage because she had been a victim herself.
Yes.
Further in, we see not a confrontation, but a conversation with Amanda present between Angie and her mother, where her mom is just basically like, I can't hear this from you. And I'm not gonna hear this from you. I was doing the best I could do. And she keeps making excuses instead of just apologizing to Angie that, yes, I put you in that situation and I am so sorry. It was the wrong thing to do.
But I didn't have any other choice. I mean, you could still qualify it, but still offer the apology and be sincere. But
she felt
Angie,
more like a victim.
Yeah, Angie,
Debbie did.
Or Debbie was being,
I'm such a martyr.
Was defensive.
Yes.
About what she did. Granted, she didn't put her kid there to be abused. It wasn't like she was recruiting for dad.
No. She said that, you know, my mom promised me that you'd be okay.
But she also knew her mom wouldn't do anything about it.
Yeah, because her mom knew.
Her mom knew
and never said anything.
Even though they never talked about it. And her mom knew and never did anything about it when Debbie was abused.
Mm-hmm.
And did you suddenly think she was going to become this fierce lioness of her grandchild? when she wouldn't do that for her own child.
Yeah, not so much.
Her reasoning is so
flawed.
Yes, flawed and self-protective that it doesn't make any sense. But at the same time, it makes complete sense because she's protecting herself.
Yeah, because she wasn't protected by the people who should have protected her
right.
as
and
a child. So
she can't allow herself to feel that way about her own child.
It's just, I have such respect for Amanda Mustard for being the one who is like, by God, we're going to talk about this. Nobody has wanted to talk about it. Nobody has acknowledged it. Nobody has shaken out the dirty laundry to get the truth out. We're going to talk about this now. And while we never get the full apology or acknowledgement from Grandpa Bill that he should be issuing, there are odd little bits of resolution that happen for Bonnie and for Debbie. In a way, she decides that she's gonna buy a motorhome and sort of set out on the road to find herself, which is an echo of the past.
Yeah, that struck me as troubling a little bit.
Yeah.
Because there's earlier in the documentary, after he got in trouble, that where he lost his chiropractic license, Bill and his wife bought an RV or got in their RV. I don't know if they bought it right then or what happened, but they start going around the country to these trade shows, you know, like where they sell all this junk, like Ginsu knives. Of course, Ginsu knives are actually pretty good.
Ginsu knives are good. But like, you know, Sledge-O-Matic, or actually that's a Gallagher thing.
Bit.
So that's probably...
That's a poor choice, especially in this particular case.
Veggio Slice or what, you know, various...
You know, those household gadgets.
The
or,
kind of things, direct marketing.
Yes.
Yes.
But it wasn't Bill doing it. It was his wife doing the sales pitches. Bill was walking around with a VHS camera.
Recording little girls on the sly.
Oftentimes, he was recording his wife doing the pitch, but he would also follow young girls and young women around and take pictures of them. Take video of them. He just could not stop himself.
So creepy.
Even
to look back at that within the context.
Yes. Even right up to almost the very end. I won't tell you what happens, but this leopard could not change its spots. And you know, it is a troubling and very difficult to watch at times documentary that lays bare the weaknesses of so many systems, well, especially in the last 50 years, with people who abuse positions of power and authority, and just move to some place where they're not known and continue to abuse that power and authority. And the damage that it can create over generations of a family. Because even when he had been out of their lives for a long time, it was still creating this tension and pain and damage that was not being dealt with because it was one of those little family secrets that nobody wanted to talk about. But it's a riveting documentary to watch.
It's gloriously made and put together. The craftsmanship of the film is pretty perfect.
It is.
As disturbing as the subject matter is, this has obviously been a labor of love for Amanda Mustard to do this, to try to figure her family out and bring some accountability to this mess, these multiple messes that her grandfather made by abusing these children.
Yes, it is. It's something.
I can see why she's an award-winning photojournalist. She has a pretty impeccable sense of, she has an impeccable eye, and her artistic sense is just pretty flawless. So there's that kind of merit, in addition to just tackling such weighty, troubling subject matter in such a poignant and powerful way. And we streamed it on HBO Max.
Yeah, it's available to stream there.
It's an HBO documentary.
Yes,
so.
It's an HBO original, and
it's not HBO Max anymore. It's just, yes, Max,
just Max
now. Whatever.
You can stream it on Max. I do not believe it is available anywhere else, like to rent or anything like that. So, if you are interested in putting yourself through something like this, it is available on Max to stream. What do you give?
I
Great Photo, Lovely Life.
I think it's brilliant, and I would give it 5 stars.
Yes, I do as well. It is,
even as hard as it was to watch.
It is not fun.
And as hard as the subject matter is, sometimes we have to, I mean, life cannot be all rainbows and unicorns and fairy dust. It's just not. And sometimes we have to face things that are unpleasant, and find ourselves better informed and better educated because of them. So that's I feel like a more educated person, and hopefully a more compassionate person, having watched this. And it just reinforces to me what I've felt like in my own family for different reasons for my whole life. It's like, you don't do anybody any favors by keeping stuff buried, because it always comes up out of the ground. No closets don't have skeletons. I believe in bringing the skeletons out. And, you know, by talking about it, it takes away things' power. So, you know, don't keep the secrets. Bring the secrets out. That's my public service announcement.
Okay. So we both are 5 stars on that.
In agreement.
What else have you been reading, watching, listening to, so on and so forth?
Okay, so full disclosure, I actually had to put a book to the side before I finished it because I just couldn't finish it.
Mm-hmm.
I was reading Leanne Moriarty's Apples Never Fall, right after having watched the Peacock miniseries starring Sam Neill and Annette Bening. Okay, so loved the miniseries, really enjoyed it. And thought, okay, I'll read the book. So I was reading the book, and I had read more than half of it, but I'm a patient reader, okay? And I don't need a lot of flashbang, and I don't need a plot that progresses at, you know, the pace of the Kentucky Derby, right? So, but even for me, this book just seemed slow, and I found myself finding other things to do rather than it just was not a page turner for me. And so I was looking for other things to read. I was looking for other things to do rather than to continue with the book. So I'm like, okay, clearly this is not for me at this time. Next year, a year or two later, I may, try to pick it back up again. But for me at this point in my life, it just was not for me. So what I am reading now, actually, I need to go into my phone because I did read a different one and finish it, and it was really cool. It was called, shoot, give me a second. The title of the book is Death and Other Happy Endings, and I will have the author for you in just a second. Melanie Cantor is the author. This was actually her debut novel. It was published in 2019. She is a British author. If the story follows, the protagonist's name is Jennifer. She is an HR professional. She finds herself caught up in multiple medical diagnoses. Throw in some family drama, romantic malfunctions, and some surprising revelations along the way. So, okay, if you are able to hang on through all the zigs and zags, I found it to be a really fun and satisfying story, and I enjoyed it. So, Death and Other Happy Endings by Melanie Cantor. After that, I have picked up a book by Jenny Colgan. She is a New York Times bestselling author of The Christmas Bookshop. What I'm reading is Midnight at the Christmas Bookshop. This follows the story of Carmen, who works in a little bookshop in Edinburgh. She doesn't own it, but she works there. She has taken over the day-to-day operations while the owner goes on an Antarctic expedition. He's like ancient and a book hoarder, and it's been a lot of fun so far. There's this kind of like big bad so far who's trying to buy up all the merchants on the street, which has been like a historic thoroughfare with like, quaint, charming little Scottish stores. And he's trying to buy them up and stock them full of like Scotland R Us crap for like cheap stuff for tourists that's poorly made and poorly made but profitable.
Trying to, if you are familiar with the area where we live, trying to turn it into Pigeon Forge and Gatlinburg.
Kind of, yeah. It's been really good so far. I'm a little more than halfway through, so next week I should be able to, Lord willing and the creek don't rise, no bad juju, knock on wood. I should be able to give you a little bit more thorough thumbnail, but I'm enjoying it.
All right.
I'm enjoying it.
Well, anything else?
Watching the occasional miscellaneous, thing that I don't write down so I don't remember. But
Okay.
yeah.
All right. Well, you and I watched The Devil on Trial on Netflix, about Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Oh my gosh, these
Yes.
people.
Specifically, the case where that was the basis of the film The Conjuring 3, The Devil Made Me Do It, a murder trial where a young man claimed that he killed the landlord where his girlfriend lived because he was possessed by a demon.
While he was possessed, so the devil did it.
Yes. And the Warrens had been in the area to allegedly exorcise a demon from a little boy from the girlfriend's brother, and the young man who was accused of murder had been there when the exorcism was going on, and things apparently weren't going great during the exorcism, And he challenged the demon in the little boy and said, leave him and come into me. And after that, the exorcism seemed to end, but the Warrens were very concerned about the man who had challenged the demon. And then some indeterminate time later is when the murder occurred, and that's what they based the movie The Conjuring 3 on.
Yeah,
they,
here, rule number one, don't provoke the demon.
Well, no, don't provoke the demon.
Don't provoke the demon.
But at the same time, don't try to bring in an exorcism and devil demon possession into a court of law, because they're not going to accept it, and that is precisely what happened. Now, everybody in this documentary, we'll roughly call it a documentary, is pretty much buys into the whole possession thing, including the adult version of the little boy who was possessed.
I felt bad for him.
Yes, I did too. I felt bad for the guy who went to prison for the murder, and his whole family, because this whole event tore up multiple lives, and of course the victim who was murdered. But there's one guy who says it was all bull, and that is the oldest son of the family where the alleged possessed brother.
Yeah, the biggest brother.
Yes, and he says it was all made up by the Warrens.
All about money.
It was all about making money. And while the family made a little money, the Warrens made about 10 times more from a book deal. It's like 90 minutes of my life I'm never going to get back. But
we never have to watch it again.
That's true. The Conjuring 3 is also not a very good entry into
The Conjuring franchise.
Conjurings 1 and 2 are much better. When they hit the road, so to speak, and when it goes to multiple locations, it's not as good. That's my opinion. But anyway, that's on Netflix, depending on your level of interest in haunted houses or the occult or possession or anything like that. Maybe it does interest you. It's called The Devil on Trial. It's on Netflix. We were very pitchy. It was kind of pitchy for us, dog.
You might want to save it for Halloween and have some popcorn with maybe some caramel drizzled over it. And enjoy some cheesy, schlock.
And a hot toddy to go along with it to, sort of dull the pain.
Extra hot on the toddy.
Yes. Now, over on Discovery Plus, I was just looking for some kind of true crime something to fill some time. And I came across a series called Caught. And it is, they're just half hour, actually they're not even half hour, they're like 22 minutes because they normally air on commercial television, but like 22 minute episodes of weird things that are caught on camera. Some of them are very serious, like automobile accidents or other kinds of accidents that happen to have been caught on police body cams or doorbell cams, perhaps weather incidents, and each episode is sort of a theme, whether it's an animal attack or something like that. Some of them are more comedic, like when people behave badly, but in a comedic way, not so that somebody gets hurt or killed, But when, you know, they get a boot put on their car, but they drive off anyway.
Hashtag jackass.
Yeah. And or you know, fans behaving badly at sporting events, things like that. So sometimes they're more comedic, and other times they're a little more serious. But still, they're just little bite-sized chunks of recorded, real recorded events that I kind of loved. It makes me a terrible person, I know.
No,
But
not at all.
that was the night you weren't feeling good. It was Tuesday when we were
Yeah, and
supposed
I
to record the
kind of
podcast and
crashed out
you punched
early.
out early.
Maude's a lightweight. We'll tell you about that later.
And no, I'm not. It's unnecessary. She just didn't feel good, so she went to bed. I watched 10 episodes of this thing.
Oh my gosh.
And I was enjoying every second of
You
it.
blazed through that like a fire.
Well, there's 10 more to go.
Oh, okay.
So I really did enjoy it. It's called Caught and it's on Discovery Plus.
Cool.
And we just finished yet another really uplifting and happy
Oh.
true crime documentary called Massacre in the Valley of the Mormons on Max. A small caravan of three SUVs were traveling through the mountains on their way to a wedding. The caravan was filled with women and very young children, or you know, preteen to toddler children, when they were ambushed, and I think a total of nine, the three adult women and six children were killed. And
There were survivors.
there were survivors, but the question after, you know, it was discovered and the children who survived were brought back and, you know, they started taking, you know, getting them to hospitals and things, was why? And over the course of the four episodes, which range anywhere from 35 to 45 minutes long, you get into the history of this Mormon community that was established in northern Mexico. They are a fundamentalist Mormon community, meaning they practice polygamy, and
That's why they went to Mexico in the
that's
first
why they
place.
went to Mexico. They have had, at times, less than stellar relationships with their neighbors, their New Mexican neighbors, over water and other issues. And of course, there's all the whole thing about drug cartels and crime and corruption in Mexico. But just the barbarism, I'm not sure which would be
Barbaric nature.
yeah, there we go. The barbaric nature of the murders of these innocent children and their mothers.
On their way to a family wedding, minding their own business.
Really. And no matter what the reason, no matter, you know, whether there was some beef over water rights, or it was a case of mistaken identity, or it was something else, it doesn't matter.
Two,
And
all three of the vehicles were shot up, and one of them was torched.
yes, one of them was burned, and there is nothing recognizable of any of the victims in the burned up car.
Just bones.
Well, I didn't see bones. Now
They blurred some of that
they had
out.
blurred out what they said was the foot, or part of the leg of one of the children who was trying to get out of one of the doors, but apparently was either shot and killed and then burned, or I don't know. But they had that blurred out. And there's also something weird, and I do not mean to be disrespectful to the people who lost wives and children, but there's some really kind of odd behavior of them, like looking at there was actual video taken by the people who perpetrated the massacre of them shooting up one of the SUVs, and the relatives watched the video. And now, granted, you can't see any of the people in the truck.
No, it's from a bit of a
It's
distance, but
from,
still.
yeah. Would anybody want to see that? I don't think I would.
I don't know. That's.
And there's other
There are some
things.
quirky behaviors
Yeah.
that, like, the husbands all seem a little. Although, granted, they are. Remembering horrible trauma, so some of that may be reflected in their what seems a little bit odd behavior to me. There's the father-in-law of one of the women who was she was the one in the vehicle that was torched. He's a little odd to me. It's they are an insular community. There's a lot of intermarriage, so everybody's related one
Yeah,
way or
a lot of
another.
cousins
A
and so
lot of
on and so
cousins,
forth.
huge families, multiple wives. So it is a culture that is very foreign to what you and I are accustomed to.
True.
So maybe that accounts for some of it. I don't know, but it was interesting, fascinating, and frustrating. To watch this.
Right. Especially the res what has happened since. And I'll just leave it there for you to discover, but it's a very, very messed up story that I wish on no one at all
No, Lord, no.
to suffer that kind of loss, no matter what sort of religion you follow or practice. It's just awful, awful, awful. And I just
Are we
could not
sorry we watched
imagine.
it, or was it good that we watched it?
Well,
It was interesting.
it was interesting. It's a little, it's a lot.
Yeah.
Especially like when the car is still smoldering, they're there with their self. I mean, the families are there with their cell phones taking video. That's another thing that struck me as odd.
Weird, but.
And there are and at that time there was still two other SUVs missing, and two carloads full of two more mothers and their children still missing. So I was that was just
Weird.
weird.
Yeah.
And but there's a lot of weird to go around in this, so
Yes.
it's called Massacre in the Valley of the Mormons. You can stream it on Max, 4 episodes. You got anything else?
No, next week is your turn. Do you have any idea?
Oh, I know.
Oh.
I have known for quite a while.
Really?
Yes.
Well, okay.
A while ago, there was a trailer that dropped. Now, this is for a movie that we've all known was being made, and it got delayed because of the strikes. And it is the third installment of a series that is now directly connected to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh.
It is Marvel's first, it is Disney Marvel's first foray, I believe it's their first foray, into R-rated territory.
Ooh.
It is also the first time that these two characters have been on screen together since a rather ill-fated attempt over a decade ago. And I can't wait to see this third installment in this particular series, but we are going to go back, all the way back to the beginning with this particular character,
Oh.
the Merc with a Mouth. We are going to watch Deadpool, starring Ryan Reynolds.
Okay.
And so I hope you enjoy it.
Well, I reckon we'll find out, won't we?
Yes, we will. But I that
It's been a while since we visited the hashtag MCU.
well, this is technically not hashtag MCU. This is when Fox still had this part of the MCU.
Oh, okay.
And
My bad.
well, not again, not MCU. But Fox had these characters because he is technically an X-Man.
Gotcha.
And he is they're making, or they have made and are close to releasing Deadpool and Wolverine, where they bring back Hugh Jackman as Wolverine.
Ah, okay.
And there was a social media push by Reynolds for a long time trying to get Jackman to come back and play Wolverine again. Jackman famously in the movie Logan, the character dies, but that's set in a different universe.
Nobody's ever really dead.
Well, yeah, of course, especially in comic books, but that's also set in a different, it's a multiverse, so this is a different Logan than the one we watched die. It's also set at a different time. So anyway,
Anyway, Hugh
but
Jackman's having to, do his crunches and eat his Wheaties.
well, he's done a good job,
Yeah.
even though he's far older than he was when he first played. I mean, he's 25 years older than when he first played Wolverine in the very first X-Men movie. So, but he's still crunching
Still working it.
and busting it. So, but we will watch Deadpool on next week's edition for Comedy Tragedy Marriage. Thank you for listening to this edition, and we're sorry. Please, if you have a suggestion for something you'd like us to watch, please send it to us. You can send it to us via email, comedytragedymarriage@gmail.com. You can also leave us a voice message by clicking the link in the description of this episode. And as always, I am Stan the Movie Man. That's Maud the Movie Broad. Love you.
Love you.
And until next time,
Later.
later.